Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay, bisexual, or trans man. If you have any comments you'd like to make during the broadcast, you can feel free to write to me at bonkaye@aol.com. Or if you have any questions after the broadcast is over, please feel free to address them as well. So tonight I'm very excited to have back one of my favorite people in the whole world, Dr. Margalef Felstad, who has really changed the thinking of many people and helped many of our women through the process that we're going through. So welcome back, Dr. Felstad.
Well, thank you very much, Bonnie, for having me.
Always such a wonderful thing when you're here because you always shed such insight. And Dr. Felstad, for those of you who may not have heard her previous broadcast, certainly is the expert on personality disorders, on the many of them that affect our lives and how to deal with them. And her books have been extremely significantly helpful to our women who have read them, and specifically, Stop Caretaking the Borderline or Narcissist, How to Find the Drama and Get On with Life, Healing from a Narcissistic Relationship, A Caretaker's Guide to Recovery, and Empowerment and Transformation, Raising Resilient Children with Borderline or Narcissistic Parents. You can find all of her books online everywhere you go and on any kind of site, and she's really highly renowned for the help that she's given to people. So, Dr. Felstad, I was thinking about this today, knowing that you were going to be having this conversation with me. And I know that in the past we've spoken a lot about personality disorders and is it nature over nurture. And I think that primarily we kind of agree that this is nature, that people are born with personality disorders for the most part. Would you say that's true?
Yes. It is partly just the way a person's brain is organized and can be genetically passed down through families. And it's also nurture, because if it's passed from a parent to a child, then you have a parent who has a personality disorder and is going to teach the child really poor responding patterns. So there's some of both.
Okay, so here's what I was thinking when it comes to our gay husbands. A lot of men who are gay do not get married. Maybe 20% of them do. And I'm wondering whether or not it's for men who really do. It seems like almost everyone who's part of our group has a husband who has some kind of personality disorder. And, I mean, they're not making this up. It's really true, you know, when you hear about the behaviors and how these men act. And I know that's not necessarily effective on gay people as a whole. But I'm just wondering
right.
if those men who do get married maybe do have a personality disorder because they lack the maybe conscience to really realize that they were wrong to do it to start with because they're just trying to satisfy one of their needs. Do you think that's possible?
Well, I definitely think that's possible. To knowingly marry when you're a homosexual and marry someone of the opposite sex, you have to have a personal reason. And that reason has to be what, you know, you want children or you want to appear to be normal in society or whatever. But it doesn't consider the impact on the partner. And that lack of empathy is the hallmark of personality disorders.
And I think that's really the case here because I always do say, and I try to give everyone the benefit of the doubt, that almost all of our husbands really did love us to the best of their ability when they married us. It's just they weren't really able to love us the way we needed to be loved as women because they are gay men. And I don't think they went
exactly.
in there trying to trick us as much as they went in trying to trick themselves so they could be straight. But I think that takes some kind of, you know, within itself, a personality disorder to think that you can go through your life lying to people, living a double life. And especially when, I can't tell you how many of the men, you know, it's interesting, we found this out like at our get-togethers when we get together, how many of these men were actually out having sex on their honeymoons with other men, which to me is so deplorable.
Oh.
They couldn't even wait till they got home.
Wow.
So you can't really say that you don't know what you're doing when you're doing it, right?
Apparently not.
I mean, can people
not.
Compartmentalize
yeah.
that much?
Well, some can, but most people can't. It's usually much more kind of self-tricking themselves to think that, oh, well, this doesn't really matter, or someday I'll stop, or who knows what other rationalization they might be using. But it
mm-hmm.
certainly isn't being tuned in to the wife, the partner. They're not thinking about their partner at all in this process.
No, they're just thinking about satisfying themselves. And that's
right.
pretty much where it comes, what it comes down to, right?
Right.
And let me ask your opinion on this, since, you know, you have a lot of experience with relationships. One of the issues that my women always bring up is that if, when the marriage ends, about who they can tell. Like, the husbands are the first to tell them, don't tell anybody, it's nobody's business, nobody has to know why we're divorcing. I don't want my family to know, I don't want our children to know. You know, this has to stay between us. And they go and they lead their gay life, and I don't understand why we have to keep it a secret for them.
Well, you don't.
Do you?
It's not even healthy for anybody to live a lie of a life. And if you, you know, when you get divorced, people ask you all the time, why did you get divorced?
Right, they do.
And if you're still protecting the person that harmed you and that didn't take care of you emotionally in your relationship, why are you doing that? And those, that's what I call caretaking behavior, where you are taking care of the emotional needs of this other person who isn't caring about you at all.
Exactly. So I always tell women that this is not your lie to keep. You know, it wasn't your lie that you lived. And that if you need to tell your family or your friends or whoever you're working with, because they see that you're coming on strong or that how upset you are or that your life's being pulled apart and they want to know why, I don't feel that we have to keep living our husband's lie for them.
Absolutely.
I think it's really unhealthy. Right.
It is unhealthy, and what I find is it's very healing and a huge relief for most women to tell the truth about what they're going through, because otherwise how can people empathize and understand where you're coming from if they have no clue what you're going through?
A lot of our women are in a situation where I know they really don't like to talk about it because they feel they're being judged for this, because people have make immediate judgments when they hear you have a gay husband, including, you mean you didn't know he was gay when you married him? Or how could he be gay? You have children with him? Or what did you do wrong that made him gay? I know people are still really ignorant when it comes to, you know, gay, and they think we have some control over it.
They are very often totally not understanding the situation. But on the other hand, the women who are in this situation also have a right to say, I'm not an expert on all of this stuff. You'll have to find that out yourself, because everybody's relationship is unique and individual. And you don't have to be the person who enlightens the whole world about this this kind of relationship.
And a lot of times, even if you try, people don't really want to know. So I think that's a good response that you said.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people just don't understand the situation, and they're not looking to understand. A lot of people are just very judgmental, and especially
well,
in the environment that we're in today. Yeah, and we're in a very pro-gay environment. And so that people right away think that you're trying to, you know, accuse people or you're homophobic. It has nothing to do with that. I mean, it's about betrayal.
It's about
living a lie, right?
Betrayal and emotional neglect and inconsideration and not having your needs met, as you have a right to expect in a marriage.
No, I think that people have to. I see a lot of times women just hanging in there, hoping for a hope that's never going to happen. And marriage is a partner, or it should be a partnership between two people whose needs are both being met, just one, not the other. But I think as women, like you've written so much about this, women by nature, I think a lot of us are caretakers. And so we're always looking to see how we can make things better, even when there is no chance of making it better.
Right, right. And hoping for some magical thing to happen. And hoping your husband, who's gay, is suddenly going to turn and not be gay is not going to happen. And the sooner a person faces that and comes to terms with it and accepts the situation they're in, then it's easier to figure out what you want to do about it.
Also, another issue I was talking to someone about today that maybe you could shed some insight on, when it comes to mother and children, that if children see how their fathers are treating their mothers with disrespect in a loveless kind of a marriage with a lot of yelling, with a lot of rage, that it's not unusual that many of them turn on their mothers as well. Have you seen that happen?
I've seen that happen, and I hear it a lot from my clients that they, their children model, I mean, are mimicking the same behavior that they're seeing in that narcissistic parent who is, you know, demeaning, blaming, insulting, rejecting, neglecting. And they pick up that behavior like children pick up all the behaviors that they observe and try it out and see how it works.
And I think that's another thing about staying in these destructive, toxic marriages. When you think you're doing the right thing for your children, you're really not. You know, you're teaching them, really modeling bad behavior, right?
Exactly. Children will model in their own lives, as well as with you, the behaviors that they see. When they're confused and when there's hostility and anger and hurt, all of those affect the child's psyche. And then they're looking for a partner who can somehow caretake them to, or they're looking to caretake somebody in a marriage relationship because that's what they've seen.
Do you see that men are also caretakers, or do you see it primarily in women?
I see a lot of men who are caretakers, absolutely. A lot of men, especially with traditional values, who feel like it's their responsibility to take care of everything, make everybody in the family happy, use all their money for what their spouse and their children want to do with it, and are really not thinking about themselves and their own needs, and then end up working themselves to death. That's not very good either.
Mm-hmm. So do you feel that it's more of a female characteristic to be a caretaker?
I think our whole society encourages women to be caretakers. We're supposed to be forgiving and understanding and put ourselves secondary. And because women are the primary attachment parenting person, we naturally do that for our children. And that's appropriate for a child. It's not appropriate for another adult to be taken care of like a child and have all of their needs met at the expense of your own. It doesn't make sense, and it doesn't make the family function very well.
Mm-hmm. So in view of the fact that now that I've pretty much determined through all these years and all the women I've worked with, most of them do have a husband who is either narcissistic or has a borderline personality. And raising children in that environment is really difficult for a lot of our women. And, you know, like I say, not everybody can, I'm not even talking about marriages that stay together. I'm talking about when they split up, that a lot of
right.
times these men just want to be controlling, or they want to make your life miserable. Even though they're not married to you anymore, they're still not happy that that they haven't finished you off. And they're always using the children, you know, in their battles. So how do we protect children from this? A lot of times the children don't want to go with their fathers, but there's no choice because the courts have ordered it. How do they survive?
Well, they survive the best if they watch their mother, in this case, having boundaries, setting limits, not caretaking the father after the divorce happens. A lot of women are very afraid to stop giving in because they think there'll be repercussions. But one of the repercussions of always giving in is that you teach your children to do that too. So there are a lot of boundaries that you can set. You can follow the exact rules of your parenting agreement. You can talk to your children in realistic terms about the situation that they're in with that parent. You don't necessarily want to talk about the specifics of your marital relationship, but most of our relationships after a divorce are about money and parenting time and rules for kids and activities for kids, and those are the same for all divorced parents. But if you have a borderline or narcissist parent that you're trying to work with, is that they want to be in control of everything, and you have to set limits about that.
Which might be sound easier said than to be done. But I just want to go through a few things in your book that you have.
Yeah.
We'll talk about a few things. So this is your last book, Raising Resilient Children with a Borderline or Narcissistic Parent. And for the few women I know that we had this discussion after they got your book, they were like really helped by this book. So I really suggest everybody who's going through this to buy this book. But you start off with, you know, when the other parent is a narcissistic or borderline. That's the first part. And you talk about the self-focused parenting, what the narcissistic family is like for children. What is a narcissistic family like for children?
Well, it means a family in which the parents are so involved with each other and their own problems that they're not paying attention to their children. And typically, parents are either over-controlling of the children or neglectful, not paying attention, not listening to their children, not even asking their children questions about their life and what they're doing and how they feel about things, because they're so busy being tense and anxious with each other. And narcissists especially expect to be able to do whatever they want, whenever they want. And they have temper tantrums just like two-year-olds. And that takes a lot of attention away from the children's needs. So children feel like they're kind of in the background. And often they end up as a result of acting out, doing poorly in school, having poor self-esteem, thinking their whole life is unfair, because often the children have to abide by certain rules of behavior, but the parents don't. And children see that very clearly, and they know that's unfair. So they can end up feeling resentful and saying, why should I have to obey? Why should I have to put up with this? And a lot of people who call me who are divorcing a narcissist talk about how their kids say, well, you guys just fix it. You know, why do I have to be in the middle of all this? And children don't like it, and it has a negative effect on them. I mean, oftentimes they have problems at school. They have emotional uproars, and they have temper tantrums themselves. They can't control their own emotions and self-soothe because nobody's there to help them.
And I think that's very possible. A lot of times women who are the caretakers are taking such good care of the narcissistic, you know, other parent that they don't have the proper time to give to their children because they're all being consumed by that narcissistic parent.
Right, and the narcissist isn't doing much paying attention to them. Narcissists tend to either idealize the child or neglect them and totally kind of tune them out. And so you either have to please the narcissist or you get very little or no attention. And so children are always kind of trying to live up to what can I do? And that can lead children into learning how to be caretakers of adults.
It's true. And the next part of your book, you talk about building resilience, resilient parent, resilient child. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, it's hard to give your child resilience if you don't have it. So, one of the most important things about building your own resilience is that you have to know what you're feeling, and you have to be able to actually see the issue that you're dealing with and be strong enough and courageous enough to look it in the eye and say, yeah, this is what I'm dealing with, and stop pretending that it will get better or it will change. So when you accept the actual dilemma that you're living in, then you start being able to problem solve. And resilient people have the ability to problem solve, to manage their own emotions so that they can help others, like their children. And they have a sense of their own values and their own morals, and work very hard to live up to those and live their life based on that, rather than hopes or fantasies about what could be.
What do you do when a parent, when a father is, you know, now they're not together anymore and the father has the children? Because I see this happening a lot too. And they're constantly bad-mouthing the mother or saying how bad she is or why, you know, he can't stay married to her. You know, and all this negativity in front of the child. What do you tell your child to do with this?
Well, the most important thing with your children is to always have open communication with them, and that means that you listen to what they say. And if you have that, so that children can come home and say, you know, that really made me uncomfortable, I didn't like that, this is how I felt about it, that you can talk to them directly. So many parents are afraid of telling their children that the other parent has problems. We, as a culture, have kind of pretended that all divorces should be friendly and equal, and you shouldn't ever say anything negative about the other parent. And that's ridiculous. It's not that you want to put the parent down, but there's lots of things you can say to help your children understand the truth or reality of things.
Can you give me some examples of that?
Yeah. Your dad was really angry while you were there. He's pretty mad about everything, it sounds like. Why don't we, you know, go to play a game and you can tell me how you're feeling, and get the child's mind involved in something, an activity. And oftentimes when you do that, if you're doing it, something with them together, or cooking a meal, or riding in the car, if you just state the words about what the child is feeling and help them to identify that, they'll start talking. You can also say, your dad calls you names. I don't like it. How do you feel about it? Do you believe what
now,
he has said about me?
Do you tell the children they should stand up to the father with this stuff or no?
No, I don't. If you keep your channel so that your child has an open channel with you, then they will have an outlet to understand what's going on, because you can talk with them about it. As kids become teenagers, they automatically start standing up for themselves. And if they don't, you can help them with appropriate statements, like, I don't like it when you're shouting at me. That hurts my feelings. Please stop. Direct comments. And helping your child understand that parent. Like, your dad often feels scared, and he wants to be the boss, and so he can feel better. I know that's unfair, and it hurts your feelings. Sometimes that's all you have to say to your child, and they'll open up and really share what's going on for them. And in, there are states like California and some other states in which having it's called parent alienation, that if you can show that that parent is alienating the child, that you can get your custody and visitation changed.
Mm-hmm.
And
I know that for a lot of
women,
that's really a struggle to do that because of the fact that they don't have, you know, the legal help that they need, or they're at a disadvantage because financially.
I
think it's great
if
there's some resources
right
they can do it with, right?
Right.
So when it comes to, why do you think that some children turn on their mothers after their mother's been the wonderful, supportive, nurturing, caring parent of the two? And, you know, sometimes that their allegiance is with the father.
Well, sometimes their behavior is attacking and hurtful to the mother because they feel safe enough with the mother to share their hurt feelings and their anger. And they can't do that with the other parent who would be threatening or attack them. And that's kind of a unfair kind of thing, but if a child feels safe with you, they're more likely to share their anger and their hurt. And with young children especially, they don't know how to do that very well. Older children, teenagers, are better equipped to understand that difference, but some of them have found that they get whatever they want if they turn on you and you're a caretaker and you give in, then they'll play it for all it's worth. The other thing to keep in mind is that if you have a narcissistic spouse, then you are likely that your children will have learned narcissistic behaviors, and some of them may have narcissistic tendencies themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, that would make sense if it is something that you inherit. And
right.
That some of them do inherit it. So
mm-hmm.
I think, like you were saying earlier, it is a combination sometimes of nature plus nurture.
Right.
The only thing I'm thinking about is when I was growing up, my father was my father was a sociopath. He did very bizarre things to hurt people. And when I was younger, I adored my father because with his narcissistic personality, he knew how to, you know, cajole me and win me over. And,
charming.
You know, very charming, or pretending to be very loving, but with no depth, but the best he could. But so I would laugh at things he did because he thought they were funny. And I think maybe the difference is that even though I grew up thinking with these distorted patterns, once I became an adult, I said, you know, there's something really wrong with this, that this is not funny, that this is hurtful to people. So maybe even if you're growing up with those kind of behaviors with parents, at some point somebody who doesn't have a personality disorder can see it for what it is. Do you think that's possible?
I think it's typical. People get into their 20s and 30s, they see the world from an adult perspective, and they can and their values become more in line with their behavior, and they start judging their parents. They start evaluating what they see based on their own moral system and their own understanding of the world. And if they don't, then it's much more likely they probably have narcissistic tendencies themselves. But most people get into their 20s and 30s and see things in a much more clear light. And I often tell parents to not disparage when you've got 15, 16, 17-year-olds that are totally self-involved and with behaviors that they've seen from the other parent that you don't like, because it's very likely that they'll grow out of them.
Mm-hmm.
And if you stay open at communication with them and you don't attack or punish too strongly what they're doing, then they'll come to an understanding as they get out in the world.
Do you think that you should address a child who's displaying these behaviors?
Say again, sorry.
Do you think you should address the child who's displaying negative behaviors and confront them on it?
Yeah, but too often parents will say, oh, this is bad, this is the punishment, rather than this is bad because, and this is how I felt, and this is what can we do about this, and actually problem solve the situation. It's not just behavior consequence, behavior punishment. It's behavior understanding. And that's what I mean by that open communication.
Do you think when you come from a father or mother who's narcissistic, because it's interesting, we have women who came from a narcissistic mother and married a narcissistic man. Maybe that's just, learning to accept bad behavior as you're growing up. But
Well, the psychoanalysts say that we have a tendency to marry a partner that is like the parent that we have the most difficulty with. That's kind of depressing to me, and I don't think that always happens. But I think often that we do have a tendency to seek out what we've already known, and it feels familiar, and that familiarity makes us think that we're in love or that this person really fits somehow. And if you come from a home in which one of the parents is dysfunctional, there is a tendency to find dysfunctional people more comfortable. And that's why I think therapy is a really important and valuable part of development for people who've come from difficult family backgrounds, because you don't want to keep perpetuating that on into the rest of your life or into your children's lives.
One of the good things, one of the many good things that you put in your book, and you keep giving this message, and I think it's so important for women to get this message, that it's not your job to try to fix, teach, or cure their behaviors or feelings. In fact, you have no power to control or change them in any way. You can expend an immense amount of energy trying to make them different, but we've never seen anyone be successful. That's a job for them to do if they choose. Every moment you use or trying to heal or fix the NPBP is a moment taken away from your own and your children's health and well-being. And isn't that true? There's nothing
that's
we can do.
That's absolutely true.
Right?
And that's what I think is the ultimate acceptance, is accepting that it's not only not your job to heal another person, especially an adult, but you have no power to do it no matter what. And I don't know, in the last week or so I've had several clients write me and say, well, I married my husband because I thought I could show him that the world is full of love and I could love him and he could really feel better about himself and his life. That's probably the worst reason in the world to get married to somebody, because that person isn't functional enough to be a partner.
Mm-hmm.
It's not your job to marry somebody so you can heal them.
I think that most of us, when we do get married, even if we see the red flags, we think that with enough love we're going to be able to, quote, fix, unquote, someone. You know, that we can take these broken men and heal them, right?
Well, that's the problem. That is a caretaker belief, and it's the one that gets people the most trouble. You're not going to change anybody ever. They've already spent 20, 30 years of their life being the way they are.
Mm-hmm.
And love doesn't heal somebody else. Love heals yourself. And if you can love yourself, if you can love yourself, then you're willing to be with someone who will love you.
Right, and don't expect that you're going to be able to change someone who doesn't love you to start with to love you, or who's not capable of love. And I think that we become these eternal optimists. And I see it, and I think it's, you know, I look back at movies and literature, how women are always saying that, you know, if I love him enough, he'll change, he'll be better. But it doesn't happen. And,
no,
you know, you look at how many women are abused and killed because they can't take that lesson. Do you see a lot of domestic violence in these cases also?
Some, but I would say by far the most is emotional abuse, emotional neglect, emotional demeaning and humiliation, and just power struggles that go nowhere. It's such a waste of energy.
I tell women, if you would put all the time and energy into changing yourself and try to change, instead of trying to change the man, you'd be really be spending your time and your energy in a much more positive way. That he can't change, but you can. I mean, you can become a stronger person. And rather than investing time into a losing battle that you can't win, there is no point to it. You have to make a game plan to get out of it. And
well,
I explained to it, it's never
going to
change.
That last part is important because a lot of women think that when you say change yourself, that means change yourself so that the other person will change in the way they interact with you.
No, no, no.
So if I'm nicer with him or if I give in more, if I just say it right, that's not the kind of change. The change is to make yourself resilient and independent.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that you don't have to stay in a bad situation. And you can start planning for a future on your own without having to be under control. Because that's what these guys are. They're controlling. You know, I think
that
they
want to control their fantasy picture of how they want to be perceived in life. You know, don't tell people I'm gay, you know. Let's pretend we're all a normal family. And that control extends through, you know, who you're friends with, who you talk to, how much you say about the family. And that's not a good way or a healthy way to live or to raise children.
No. It's bad enough you're living the lie. Your children don't have to keep living the lie in their life either.
Well, the
so
thing is, if you live a lie, your children will live a lie.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't any other option for them. So if you're lying about how your relationship is, then your children are living in that lie.
And children know when you're lying. So
I hate
to cut this short, but we're ending our time together. It went so fast, Margot. Thank you so much.
Did.
You always have such wonderful insight. And hopefully you'll come back to us in the spring so we can discuss this further. And for all of our listeners, once again, thank you. You can see Dr. Felsad's name the way it's spelled on this broadcast. Please. Also, Dr. Felsad has a wonderful newsletter. I keep posting it in our room, but you can get it on your own. And you know, I'll put that information in our support chat, or if you need more information, please let me know. Once again,
great.
Have a wonderful holiday season, Margalis. Thank you so much for being part of our network. All right.
I
love to all of you.
Enjoy coming on.
Thank you. Talk to you soon again. All right. Good night.
Bye-bye.